Now, the ecliptic wildly swings back and forth over the Earth's equator by a factor of 23.5 degrees. And as the moon travels along that, sometimes its motion close to the time of rise is more parallel to the horizon than at other times of the year. So in the fall, the moon is moving more towards the north with each passing evening and a little bit towards the east, so it gives you a small delay. But if you look at, say, the risings of spring evenings, what happens is the moon's motion relative to the horizon is mostly downward. And so the delay between successive moon rises can be an hour and 5, hour and 10, hour and 15 minutes.
The agrarian society used the harvest moon to help them do exactly that, harvest.
Right. But, you know, it didn't really become popular, probably with the city folk, until around 1908. Because in 1908, something famous happened.
A song was written.
A song was written. Shine on, Harvest Moon. And I will spare the listeners my singing of that particular song. But in 1908, Nora Bays composed the song, and lyricist Jason Norwalk put the music to it and the words to it. And lo and behold, we had this very famous song, Shine on, Harvest Moon. And so it was a love song. And as a result, everybody kind of fell in love with it. And here we go. Harvest Moon is now popular.
The harvest moon is also being called a super moon this time around. Is that just a bunch of hyperbole? Is it actually bigger?
Oh, it actually is. Absolutely, it is. The concept of the super moon really wasn't introduced until around 1979, and it was done by astrologers, people who would believe that the position of the sun, moon, stars, and planets among the background constellations and signs would influence life on the Earth. But astronomers have always known about this concept, and we just simply called it perigee. It was closest to the Earth. And the moon can swing wildly because its orbit is not, in fact, perfectly circular. At some points, the moon can be as far as 252,000 miles away from the Earth. And at other times, say around the time of a supermoon, 222,000 miles. And that's much closer. So being closer, it is actually considerably larger in the sky, and it's considerably brighter. So it is a real phenomenon.
Okay, we're shooting for the trifecta here because we also have a blood moon eclipse.
Right. They're all coming together here. You know, we have autumn starting on the 23rd of September, and then we've got that total lunar eclipse that's going to occur here in the early evening hours on the 27th. You're going to have at the same time on the 27th the supermoon, and then of course the moon will turn bloodish red simply because it's passing through the shadow of the Earth in the phenomenon known as a total eclipse. What happens is that the perimeter of the Earth, the atmosphere, actually has a capacity of bending the red rays of the sun into the Earth's shadow.
So it slows down the light?
No, it just changes its direction. You wonder why the sky...
like a lens.
Right. It does like a lens. Like during the daytime, the sky is blue. People ask, why is the sky blue? It's clear, right? Well, the sky is blue because the atmosphere scatters blue light. And so it comes to us from every direction in the sky, and we see our sky as being blue as a result. So what happens is because the atmosphere is so good at scattering this blue light, it doesn't make it through the atmosphere, and it gives the blood red appearance to the moon. So it's very common, very typical of a total lunar eclipse.
We have these wildfires blazing across the western part of the United States, and they're pumping tons of particulate into the atmosphere. Is that going to have any effect on the moon?
Well, it seems
not an effect on the moon.
No, it does. In terms of appearances, it can, because the sky will often be redder and the sunsets are more beautiful. Oftentimes, you get certain types of forest fires or volcanic eruptions and things like that. Many years ago, when Mount St. Helens exploded, all that dust got into the atmosphere, but it was so fine that it had a real strong tendency to scatter out red light rather than blue light. The particles were actually larger than normal. And because it scattered out the red light rather than the blue light, you got it a blue moon. The moon actually appeared steely blue at night, and I watched it for several nights, and it was just absolutely amazing.
As opposed to what we call a blue moon,
right,
which is just when you get second full moon during the same moon. Do we have planning moons, calving moons, lovers moons?
We've got all kinds of moons. Depends on the culture. Many cultures call them different things. And I think many of the names that Americans are most traditionally familiar with will be something like the American Indian names that have been handed down to us. So they you know, might want to call it, you know, the running fish moon, or perhaps the snow moon, or perhaps the starving wolf moon. They'll give names to the moon depending on the times of year, because American Indians, like many cultures, would use the moon to keep track of the cycle of the seasons, as well as perhaps the sun. But the moons were easy to count.
Thank you very much. Carl Wenning, who is with the Amateur Astronomers and was the director of the Illinois State University Planetarium for years. I'm Jim Brown.
Oh, the moon is dead or tail of I ain't had no love since January, February, June, July. No time, ain't no time to stay. I told him, spoon, shine on harvest moon. For me and my gal,